I'm just gonna be literally that's my brain for every episode over 200, because what the fuck are we doing?
Over yeah, 200.
Every time we say,
we need a reverse of that sound.
I know.
Every time we say the episode number, I'm just like, this seems like too many, man.
Yeah, it doesn't sound right.
Right. That's disturbing. Anyway, I'm Kate. I'm here with Burb and Rana and Devin and Chris, and we are discussing Tales of Light and Life. We're reading the first six stories for this episode. It's an anthology of just short stories written by all the folks who are involved with the High Republic project. I'm excited to dive into this one because there's just some wild shit going on. Like, in terms of like I don't know, like, I feel like books and short stories are always, like, relegated to being, like, fucking side material, and I'm like, no, there's so much, like, crazy stuff happening. So, anyway, what are we drinking? Rana, you're the first on the screen, so I'm gonna call it.
Sure. So, I didn't have anything convenient, like, any, well, I had beer, but it wasn't beer I like, and I didn't want to open a whole bottle of wine, so instead, I made myself this strange, it's not really a concoction, it's a kind of a basic bitch drink. I took a mint lime Topo Chico and squeezed a very underripe lime and have some Mi Campo tequila. And it's kind of like what I want when I go out dancing and get a tequila and seltzer, but better because it's a mint and lime Topo Chico.
Yes.
So Topo Chico. You know, that's not bad, honestly. And then I also have two sips left of my strawberry hibiscus Nixie sparkling water that I got from my aunt's house ages ago and found in the back of my fridge. It's doing great.
That's where we find most of our beer, honestly.
So. Exactly. So that's what I got. Oh, and I'm drinking it. Well, don't report this, but you know, it's not enough to get in trouble. I'm drinking it out of a cup that I stole from a rooftop pool 2 years ago. So.
I'm gonna tell the rooftop pool that you stole a cup.
Call the
I'm
cop.
Not gonna say where it was, but it was this cute, like, teal, like, heavy plastic cup from the pool, and that place really overcharged us. So
I
kind of want to go back to get another one.
Was it in Vegas? That feels like the type of thing that happens in Vegas, where they, like, give
Denver.
You these. Oh, fair.
Ooh.
Denver. Which I think is similar to how Vegas was 10 years ago. So, you know.
Oh, boy.
I don't even know where to start with that.
I don't know, guys. I'm sleepy. I'm going to go ahead and pass it over to Burb, who's looking at me like she's going to block my contact info.
I'm just trying to think where Vegas 10 years ago. That would have been around the time of my bachelor party. Vegas was kind of sad 10 years ago.
Was it? Was that the start of the sad? Vegas is always sad. But
Vegas goes in cycles of
being
sad and not sad.
I've heard now it's, like, really, really sad. So.
Yeah.
Although
I was there in October, and it was Fremont Street was great. I wasn't on the strip, though. Sorry, go ahead, Burb.
Wait your turn.
I just have many questions that they're not actually questions because there's no real words forming. It's just, like, big question marks in my brain. So
a
I'm
questioning
just gonna move
vibe.
On. Yeah, the vibes are question mark. I'm drinking a beer. It is regular. It is a pilsner.
All right.
It is from down the street.
Is it your backup beer? Did you finish your first one already?
Is it what?
Is it the backup beer you grabbed, or
are you? No, but I'm still my first one. The backup beer is the same beer.
Mm. All right, got it.
But we'll see.
Yeah, okay. What, Chris?
Well, it's like 80 plus degrees here, which is normal in March.
No.
Apparently now. So that's going to be fun this summer.
No.
But since it was very summery and I was outside, I decided to go for a more summery whiskey and went with a rye. So this is from 291 Distilling in Colorado Springs. It is their Colorado rye whiskey.
Sorry, my face was not the springs. Sorry, go on.
I mean, that's fair. It is aged with aspen staves, because what is more Colorado than that? But yeah, it's very good. It's a very good rye.
Devin, what you got?
Somewhere around my apartment that I can't currently remember, there is a glass of 7-Up with a little bit of grenadine in it. I don't remember where I put it. Yeah. Oh shit. Yeah.
Well, I guess it's ginger ale and grenadine. Still, right? Though, so
it's,
same
thing. Yeah.
It's close enough.
Sandra Temple. A little Sandra Temple.
I hope I could find it.
I don't know where it is. I'm sure it'll show up at some point. But I'm
will it hurt it. Magenta and blue? Like if they
it's
find
up
it?
High enough that they can't get to it. I just don't remember one of the 7 places I have that I put things.
That's so real.
The cats like dipping their paws in it. So.
I don't think I've seen them do a lot of like drinking like liquids that I have. They do eat off of the plates that I just keep in the sink every now and again, which is annoying, but it's fine, I guess.
Okay. So,
anyways, I'll stop talking now. Bye.
I got tired of hearing Chris talk about all his fucking Japanese yen that I think he drunk the last of at this point, but
no, I still have some.
Jesus Christ. I got a tiny bottle of this was one of 2 tiny bottles of gin I got while we were in Japan, and I forgot about, and then was like, I should drink that. So this is Sakurao from Hiroshima. It's a dry gin, and yeah, that's all I got. Hiroshima's lovely. Also, aside from obviously important history things happen, and also is actually like a place people live in is very pretty, actually. So anyway, our cause for this book is Justice for Migrant Women. Their website is justiceforwomen.org. That is a number 4. And their goal is to educate and raise awareness globally and throughout the U.S. about issues affecting migrant women. They are focused on anti-discrimination and anti-violence, equal pay, and other general labor protections. And they also host therapeutic art project. So the Bandana Project is a public awareness campaign aimed at addressing workplace sexual violence against farm worker women in the U.S. So folks will go and decorate white bandanas and hang them about to raise awareness about this issue. So they're doing a lot of good things. Please give them money, because everything sucks. So yeah. Anyway, speaking of everything sucks, there's a lot going on in the first 6 stories in this book. Which
the vibes are bad in the galaxy.
Yeah. I also want to point out that Chris wanted us to read this entire fucking book and 4 comics for this week, and I said, why?
I did kind of forget how long the stories were.
You didn't forget the page count of the whole book?
Yeah.
Whatever. All right. Anywho, like I said, we read the first 6 stories. When and where are we? Kind of all over the place. But I think, at least thus far, we're more or less going in chronological order from story to story. We start with Baby Axel, which, who boy. And the stories we've read so far go up to, I don't know, a few months after the fall of Starlight Beacon. So yeah, we're having a good time the whole way through, really, between Axel and his dissolute youth and him being like, I'm gonna grow up to be just like my dad 1 year later. I'm gonna drink myself to death because my dad died. So, you know.
Can I just say, for somebody who like keeps telling himself that he's like so street smart and can like get himself out of situations, Axel's instincts are so, so bad.
It's incredible, because I'm just
fucking
like,
dumbass.
He's always been this stupid. He loves trusting people who are very clearly bad guys. As soon as they introduce that like extremely like a magical girl described, like, you know, classmate of his, I was like, criminal, something bad. Like, I don't know, assassin, like, oh, something bad's gonna happen.
Oh, she's the most beautiful person you've ever met, and you're just gonna ignore, like, not to, I don't want to stereotype this stranger in the galaxy far, far away that I do not know, because I do not know her, but the whole, there's like a whole page, like, her family is criminals. Mm-hmm. Famously, lots of crime, space, mafia, and he's like, she's different, though.
He can fix also, her.
The messiness with her kissing him and then having a boyfriend, but the boyfriend is like his arch nemesis. I was just like, what are we doing here?
His arch nemesis who like cries when Axel's like, we're not friends.
Yeah, exactly.
And then Axel felt bad. I was like, oh my god, this is so embarrassing for everybody. Like, I just...
You could not pay me to be 17 again.
Never. Right? I'd rather die. Sorry.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Don't kill yourself, 17-year-olds. It's worth living. It gets way, way less bad, but also it doesn't. But like, your own life gets better, just the world gets a lot worse, that's you know?
It's true.
It's my cousin's birthday and he just turned 30. He doesn't listen to this, but I'm just like, I just left texting this morning being like, haha, you're old now. And he's like, I feel like I've been old. And I'm like, but does your back hurt all the time? Because if not,
it doesn't have to at 30, for the record. We can prevent this.
No, oh yeah, it God, does. Yeah, it does.
Look at me. I can lift heavy weights. Congrats. No,
we all can do it, guys. We can all do resistance training in some
way. I do it, and my body still hurts.
I resist the training.
I appreciate the pun of we can all do resistance training in a podcast about Star Wars.
That used to be my magnum opus for how I would finally make, well, not really magnum opus, I don't know why I said that, but that used to be my grand scheme. I tried to get my cousin, who's a personal trainer, to design a Star Wars workout app with me, and I had this whole idea that we could pitch it to Disney.
Oh my
didn't
God.
Matter. No, she didn't do it. She had a baby instead. Selfish. I will say I got
truly
this idea
fucking
because
kids.
My gym in Colorado had a like a cardio theater, and they played The Force Awakens. And when you go to the Rebel base, as soon as the music started, what is that called? The Flight of the Resistance or whatever the hell that leitmotif is. Everyone on all the treadmills synced up when they were running. And I was like, okay, we have to have a Star Wars workout app. You could combine it with
that's
Disney
fantastic.
Marathon. You could do stations.
That's cool.
You could do workouts at Celebration. Like, I was going to call it Force Fit, by the way. It's not copyrighted, so I checked.
Oh my
God. It doesn't exist. So if you're listening to our podcast, one of two confirmed listeners,
that's a get on that.
Send me
title.
A message.
I love it.
Oh, I didn't think of it that way, Devin. God damn it.
Wait, what?
God damn it.
Oh.
I didn't think of it that way. I thought about the Force and fitness.
As we continue our uninterrupted discussion of Star Wars.
Yeah, right, really.
Where absolutely nothing just happened and got cut out.
And it definitely wasn't Feet Pod. So, I don't know how much more we want to say about this story, other than obviously it's where Axel meets Alicia, and also where he just, she's just a horribly consistent person.
Famously, I can't read, so I can't say that I know for sure how old Axel is, like, in the stories we've previously seen him in.
He's definitely, like, in his 30s.
Okay, that makes a lot more sense, because it seemed like Alicia was, like, very young in this, in a way that I did not expect.
Yeah, this seems like it's, like, long before the path.
Yeah, it feels, like, for me, like, spitballing, I would say it's probably like 15 odd years before convergence.
Okay. And I mean, she feels small time in this too, because they're talking about this pocket watch should cover us with the huts, and I'm like, how expensive is that pocket watch, or how little do you owe the huts and you're worried about it?
Mm-hmm.
Which, like, I know the huts, like, you know, book no disrespect when it comes to owing them money, but, like, I don't know. It was interesting, though, to kind of, like, see her scams start small, and, like, but she always kind of does it in plain sight, and, like, that's kind of how she has operated, but she definitely kind of leans more into her own powers of persuasion through the Force as she gets older and like kind of gets her aspirations get bigger. Always also, a thief though.
I was just thinking, like, we know that oh my god, I've already forgotten her name. That Axel's mom has been Chancellor for a while in the later stories, right? Like, she's mm-hmm. built up a yeah. huge political yeah. career by then. And in this, mm-hmm. she's, like, considering going for it. Mm-hmm. So, I think that tells yeah. us something, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that. One thing I will, since you just pointed it out and poked something in my brain, like, interesting to me that she is always, like, wanting this to be, like, very closely adjacent, though, to sources of wealth. You know, she makes these partnerships, we know, with the Graffs. And here she's just like, I am going for the biggest thing I can find on this planet, which is this rich people party, which, fair enough.
I'm a little sad that we never get anything from her perspective throughout phase two and this. Like, and like, I get it, like, you know, not every villain needs to like have both sides of them like explored. Like, I don't think it's like a loss for the story, but like, I just kind of would have liked to know, like, what is her deal? And like, I don't know. Yeah, like, kind of like you were saying, like, she likes to be this kind of like hanger on with wealthy people. And where did she get that? Like, is that from Mom and Dad Zevron? Like, were they actually like really like greedy people and Olivia was just rescued by the Jedi from it? Like, or is that like something different where she just like loves shiny things? I don't know. I feel like that could have been interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like we're supposed to go. Yeah, go ahead.
I feel like we kind of talked about this last time when we finished up Path of Vengeance, but it does feel like she's just like this just because some people are like this. And I do appreciate that so far about her story, because like, sometimes people just fucking suck, man.
Yeah, I do agree with that. And that's why I don't think it was like needed. And I do appreciate that Axel, like, this wasn't a story about how Axel used to be a straight A student and then his dad died.
Like,
and
a his
girlfriend said Asian. That she wasn't his girlfriend.
He tried drugs once. That was it.
Oh my god.
And he found himself living in a van down by the river.
Jesus fuck. One thing I'll say is that I think we're supposed to extrapolate for Alicia that she, you know, because she felt so powerless not being chosen by the Jedi, that she probably has been reaching for that her entire life. But also, they don't really say that. We can fill in whatever. So, yeah.
I mean, she could also just be smart and have just picked up from an early age that hanging around rich people is
smart enough. I would argue at this point in her life. In
yeah.
the short story.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, listen, like, smart people can be small time before they have big aspirations. But like, yeah, like, I mean, she could have just picked up from an early age that, like, you know, doesn't even have anything necessarily to do with the Jedi. She just kind of found the path that hated them and was like, I can kill two birds with one stone here.
No killing birds.
I mean, she's also birds. Like, intoxicatingly beautiful, and I think that there's something, like, she knows how to use that, and I think in real life we see that sometimes too, right? Where it's,
oh yeah,
I mean, not in a bad way, beautiful people are not inherently immoral or something, but like, there are definitely people who learn, oh, I can get access to these spaces and make this work for me when they mm-hmm. look, when they have a face that people want to invite everywhere.
Yeah,
like, no, it's a thing.
Pretty privilege is real.
Mm-hmm. Alicia, the icon of pretty privilege.
Incredible. And then she went and took over a cult, as one does.
I mean, if that's not pretty privilege, I do not know what is.
Oh my goodness.
I think the kids would call that Riz.
I'm moving right along here.
I just had flashbacks to teaching.
You know, my students were by and large great, and then sometimes they would say things, and I would just feel so old. Devin, I'm sure you've had this experience as well. I just, yeah, never forget that time that one of my kids called American Pie a, quote, really old movie, and I almost threw myself out the window. of the first story, but you know.
For Kate, that's a long way.
Mm-hmm.
It's true. It's kind of true. If y'all haven't met her, Kate is very small.
It's true. All right. Continuing on with cult type of things.
Speaking of crazy motherfuckers.
I know. So I didn't necessarily go story by story, at least for this first episode, because I think there's stuff to talk about in this first bit that we read in terms of like how it fits into the overall scope of the book and what it's trying to do. So we're gonna talk about A Closed Fist Has No Claws. I think I said all those words correctly. And then just kind of collectively about the aftermath of the Starlight Beacon disaster, and then probably come back around to some of the other more lighthearted question mark stuff that's going on a little later. But yeah, here we are. Marta Rowe, 3 years after Path of Vengeance, had 3 years to sit and stew about how she grew up in a cult and decided to make a new cult, but worse somehow. So that's cool.
It is like, sorry, you go, Rana.
No, my thing is unimportant. You go and then I'll give mine.
I was just going to say, it is so textbook. Kid grew up religious, went to religious high school, and then went to college, found out that there actually weren't consequences to their actions, and just becomes completely hedonistic.
It's true. I didn't think of it that way.
Yep.
I was just going to say, maybe something's wrong with me, but I fucking loved this story. I thought it was so well written. And I don't know if this is like the same thing in my brain as when we read From a Certain Point of View for Empire, where the worm story was like my favorite thing for years. Maybe this is something I should talk to my therapist about. Like, I thought the story was so fucking good. Phenomenal. No. And sad, like deeply sad.
Yeah.
Rana actually just wants to know if we would still love her if she was a space worm.
Oh my god.
Yes. Okay. I've separated myself from the reality of that.
I
would still love you if we were a space worm.
Oh my god, thank you. I also love the story. So, Ronnie, you weren't here for last episode, but one of the questions that I asked was at the end of Path of Vengeance, like, where's Marta at in the grand, like, kind of moral scale of the galaxy? And I was saying, like, I feel like her potential at that specific moment, and of course, like, we're fast-forwarding 3 years, we don't know what happened in those 3 years, but at the very end of Path of Vengeance, like, it was a tipping point for her, where she really could, I feel like, could have gone a lot of different directions. Obviously, taking the leveler with her was a whole fucking choice, since it ate the mother's face and also all the rest of her soul. So that was good. But yeah, it was interesting that she chose to finally like get her revenge on the mother, but also spared a Jedi Padawan from getting eaten by the bad dog. Like, there's a lot going on there, and so I was kind of like, I think there is a point at that specific moment where she could have decided to do something less violent with her life. And I feel like Chris and Burb were both like, no, she's just gonna keep being suck. Like, I don't,
she's like, we kind of talked when we were closing again Path of Vengeance about how her ideology has kind of changed, like, knowing about you know, the mother, like, who Alicia is as a person, and like knowing that she's been lying this whole time, but she's still so bought into the cult in general. Like, she still is very, like, fervent about those beliefs and, like, the Force is bad and all of this. Like, I feel like at that point she's just so deep that, like, it's only gonna get worse. Especially if she's sitting alone on a spaceship with people she's manipulating for 3 years and just turning evil. I don't want to call her evil, even though she is, but like, I don't think
that's an unfair characterization at this stage.
You like to sleep in a throne with old blood on you and also enjoy, you know, bringing people into your strange cult and low-key grooming them.
She's like, I'm not going to take this next Jedi into the levelers. room, and then she's like, and then I brought this Jedi down to the lover's room. It's like, this is...
So...
This is bad.
So Chris and I were talking off pod, which we're fired. I not understand. So one thing I didn't fully realize fully articulate is that so during phase one, the short story accepted, like the phase one books of the High Republic, Marta is somewhere between 15 and 17. We're not sure because there's like a fucking timeline error somewhere in there, but she's between 15 and 17. And I feel like at that age, like, yeah, of course you don't fucking know what you're gonna fucking do. And also, yeah, she's I don't think that's an age at which, like, you know, you can fully decide like what you are or where you're gonna be. Clearly she has decided now, but yeah, go on.
We also don't know however any like what their development is like, right? Like, sure. I mean, this is a very I'm not gonna reference another thing because I reference this all the time on this goddamn podcast. We're going to stay in Star Wars. God damn it. I generally assume like that the different species have different, I don't know, processes. Sorry, I got corrected on how it's actually mispronunciation to say it that way the other day. So now I know. The more you know. Anyway.
I'm fucking ever.
Sorry, it's late. But what I'm trying to say is that I'd be curious to like how in her own development as an Evereni, like where is her age and... She's just lonely. Like, mm-hmm. She's so lonely.
Yeah.
I think really regardless sad. Of however any age, like, it's still in the 15 to 17 range. It's still, like, a very impressionable age, which we see in real time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think, Rana, I think you really hit it on the head that she is lonely. And I think her, what we see in this story is that kind of her ultimate desire, in a way, is belonging. Like, she's spending all of her time and resources looking for other Evereni.
Yeah.
And she wants to know where she comes from. She wants to meet others and just experience what it's like to have people because she's been unmoored since the path fell apart. And she did her best to put a new group around her, but it's not the same as having peers. And what she really wants is peers, not being in charge of people. And she can't get that from other people. And so I think when you talk about her conversation with, God, I cannot remember his name.
Velia.
Yeah. With Velia at the end about like...
Her kidnapped husband, whatever the fuck is going on there.
Her definitely not hostage husband who for sure lived much longer than this story.
Well, yeah, because...
How else do they make Evereni babies?
Babies, yes.
I mean, they had sex over the course of this story. That was the joke. I think he dies very quickly after this story, but
I mean, whatever.
Did they have sex?
No,
I mean, other people have sex.
They have sex off. They absolutely have sex off page, 100%.
I thought she also slept with that woman who she
her girl toy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought she was using her.
Not like, the young one. The other one. Who she first invites onto the ship.
Yeah, that's the one I thought she was like using the woman's attraction to her as like a trick to like come be my hostage. That's how I read that.
I thought it was, I read it as a little more, maybe consensual is not the right word, but I read it as a little more sexual.
Reciprocated, yeah.
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 Like she was definitely using her, but they both knew that they were being used.
Sure. Yeah, so who knows?
Now we're back to the previous conversation.
They were courting.
Anyway,
I think the point being like in that final conversation with Velia where they're talking about like Marta's place in the galaxy, like, and like what is she gonna leave behind, she's like legacy, but to have a legacy you need to like have people, because like if you just die alone you don't have a legacy.
Yeah,
that's such a fascinating idea because I don't agree with it at all. Like, I feel like it. Sorry, Kate's going.
No.
No, she's telling you to continue.
I thought she was telling Chris to shut the fuck up.
I mean, I'm always telling
her. I mean,
say anything.
When I'm both.
When has that stopped her?
Preemptively shut the fuck up.
But, I think, I would argue that, I mean, I hope we're all on the same page about this, but I would argue so much of legacy, even in Star Wars, is ideas and the rippling out of someone's teachings and the rippling out of their views and the small lessons that they've taught people or people have been around to be a part of. So it's really interesting to also see this very sad, like, two steps away from the trad wife people or now all the manosphere people who are like, my legacy will be my 17 children unvaccinated. Oh, anyway, sorry, Marta Rowe does not have an opinion on vaccination.
I know, her vaccination, I mean, or her opinion is measles outbreak.
Sick. I don't necessarily think that you and Chris are opposed there, because like you have to have people to teach in order to
I don't disagree with with like Chris. I just mean with the concept from Marta, like think what I love about Star Wars, specifically about the books, is that so often you see something that is five characters removed from where you've seen it before. And that sort of like rippling out of this person's impact is one of my favorite things that we see, I think, specifically in the written media that we don't get as much of in the shows and the movies.
So with the story, like, in addition to all these other points, oh my gosh, my voice. So two things are happening for me here. One, I think, is, you know, when we're talking about loneliness with Marta, who grew up in a cult, the only way she knows how to relate to other people is through cult vibes. And so she's like, this is how, I know, right? Barb is like, she's like, so this is how I will get what I want, because I don't know what else to fucking do. And also keep in mind, I think she is solidly 18 in the story, timey-wimey fuck ups, you know, notwithstanding. And the second thing for me is just like, her, that deep loneliness that Ron was talking about, and also that longing for, you know, understanding where she comes from and how that is going to inform where she's going, is also like, you know, at least for me, I was like, oh, wow, I have a lot of feelings as a diasporic person, you know, where like, you know, she's just, you know, she meets that old fella in the cantina and he starts talking to her in whatever language ever any speak. And she's like, I don't know what that is. And I was like, same. Like, you know, like I go to my dad's house and it's just like me dissociating, shoving food in my face while people talk over my head, and I'm just like, all right, like, you know, it's like it felt like that. Anyway, which is all to say, I really, that longing for understanding, and still, you know, I think Velia also still tells her like, you're not like other Evereni, like, even though you are. And I was just like, I just felt, dude, you know, I thought that was really 1,000% great, a great depiction.
I think, agree. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, you go, Rana. You,
the other thing I think of with all of that is, you know, I didn't think about this until we were reading this story, but Marta's views on Evereni are almost always things that non-Evereni people have told her. Occasionally they're things that her cousin told her, but it is so much her embracing, especially in this story, embracing the things that have been used against her, embracing the stereotypes of her people. And yeah, I think when you mentioned the like diasporic experience, or the experience for people who have been forcibly disconnected from their culture, it's very accurate. And it also makes me really want her. It's like, this is kind of fucked up, but it's like, you know, when you meet someone who's maybe culturally or like ethnically from a certain culture and they only have white friends, and you're like, oh my god, like, I just want you to have friends from your own background, because this is hard to watch. It's kind of like that, where I'm like, oh my god, I want her not to just be trying to impress and latch on to Evereni people. Like, I want her to go find that uncle and just like have tea with him for 3 days. Like, I want her to like,
oh my gosh,
go find other people and not just try to be as, you know, impressively stereotypically Evereni as she can. But it just, yeah, I don't know, it made me think a lot about her own understanding of what it means to be Evereni in this story, and then especially with what you just named, Kate.
I went through a phase, it was not good for me, you know, like, I just,
and like, you know, not to give Kate things to talk about in therapy this week, but like, I feel like it's really two sides of the same coin, how she is unable to relate to people without a power structure, and
oh my God,
how
you
she
mean
doesn't.
Marta. I thought you meant Kate. I was like, what the fuck?
boy. Gonna drive to Colorado and slap Chris.
Let me just shit on my walls in the middle of this podcast.
Chris told me things that we do not talk about. Again, I'm having the rest of the
day. Oh boy.
And he's gonna have to deal with it.
Oh my god, that's so funny. Your class. Okay.
Continue.
Well, anyway. For Marta, I think it's two sides of the same coin that she is really unable to interact with people without some sort of power structure at this stage of her life, and also that she doesn't have this connection, because connection and culture and language are like fundamentally built by love, and she's never actually experienced that. And she never had, she was too young to remember her family. She never had a loving family that she grew up with. Yana was also very young, and so did her best to protect her, but there's limitations to that, and there are always limitations if you parentify somebody who's actually just 3 years older than you. So the fact that she never experienced that love means that she doesn't know how to actually interact with people on a level playing field. And the only way that she knows how is through hierarchy. And when you're interacting through hierarchy, if you can get to the top of that hierarchy, you do that because that's how you prevent yourself from getting hurt.
And that's how you get the most love.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Or what you equate it to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she does not know what love actually is, but
yeah.
Yes.
Big oof.
Yeah, fear, admiration become replacements for love because you don't actually know what real love is.
I think she needs space therapy.
I was thinking about this earlier while I was like, things that pop through my head when I'm about to take a nap. knowing how she was with the kids in the path, I was so curious to know what she was like as a mother. That's just a thing I'm throwing out there. Thought there, but yeah.
It is interesting.
The rows are fascinating. I would take any amount of material about them that anybody wants to produce.
I was going to say, I wouldn't mind additional information about Marta and the row line. And I don't think I'm very behind on what Star Wars has been announced in terms of books, because when they canceled Acolyte, I just got mad. But
relatable.
I don't think there's been anything announced, but I would love to know that. And we're going to get a lot more of Markian in phase 3. And we know about Markian. We know about Asgar, and we know Asgar's mother. I don't remember her name, but it wasn't Marta. So we know that there's been a handing down of all this, of the Nile, of leadership of the Nile, of this Evereni hyperspace tech that glows green, which I think is an allusion to the path engines, of the leveler, of this grand culture of, in and of itself, that isn't even ever any culture, but is just uniquely Ro and Nile culture. And yeah, I agree. I think that would be really fascinating to see.
I would love to see a continuation of her hunting the Evereni. Because she does use the word hunting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I was like, you did kill at least one of them on the page.
And there's not that many left.
Right.
There's
you
not
killed
many
a non-zero
left.
Percentage.
And this is, in phase 1, we only saw Markian. And now it's we have Marta and Yana. And then in this little interlude, it's here's a couple more. And we've been given so many, but how do we get to the point where will we be introduced to more? Or is it just they're all dead now, man?
Mm-hmm.
Except for one, they got to reproduce somehow, but.
Markian does not fuck, unlike Geode.
That is definitively incorrect. Gerastaros is in 100% disagreement with you on that.
Listen, I don't know what they were up to, but it was not reproductive, okay? Anyway.
Fucking doesn't have to be reproductive.
Yeah, no. What sort of Catholic nonsense is that? Can we
not name this? Speaking of cults.
Doesn't count if you... Anyway.
Okay, that's homophobic.
No.
That's... Cancel Kate.
That's...
everybody cancel Kate. Hashtag cancel Kate.
Oh my god. God, that's
gonna be our next cause.
The joke is that it's bad. Do we have any other thoughts about Marta before I go rambling about connections to the modern?
Someone put this, mm-hmm. and I did not put this together. So mm-hmm. props to you for having a higher reading level, because I am apparently in second grade. The Eye of the Storm and Ro meaning to look or see. I 100% did not get that. So
I didn't.
Thank you for being able to read.
Thank you.
2 degrees in reading.
Thank you.
Devin's about to have more than me, but you know.
Some of us have 0 degrees in reading, so we thank you.
So just a few interesting threads that I picked up on, and I'm sure there are many that I missed that I'll turn it over to y'all in a hot second. But one of the things is just the Nile philosophy of just kind of like, you know, the Marta goes from the path and the force is good and things will balance out as long as you treat it correctly to nothing matters, everything is chaos, just take what you want, like it's because nothing matters, there are no consequences really, like it's all whatever. I thought it was interesting her, that's kind of where she landed, especially because Alicia is so enamored of Axel and how chaotic she thinks he is. So anyway, there's something there. We mentioned Ro being a verb. Marta has 3 tempests under her. She doesn't call them that yet, but it is a like kind of a triumvirate under the eye, which I thought was interesting. They have these. There's a mention of some Everani she came across who had some sort of like garbage cobbled together ship, which is what the Nile wind up using. So yeah, just reuse, recycle, or something. I don't know what they're doing.
Reduce, reuse, recycle. Is it the not husband, the girl she may or may not have sex with, and somebody else?
I don't think it's them. I think it's whoever it was who.
Or the one who the wife. Him.
Yes.
The wife killed?
Yes. Or,
yeah, yeah.
Maybe. I don't know. I had alcohol.
She also might have been fucking. I don't know.
Oh. Yeah.
Marta might fuck like Gio does. I'm not going to lie.
No, Marta definitely fucked.
I don't think there's any might in that statement. Even ignoring the fact that we're seeing her descendant in the other books.
And then lastly,
maybe she's waiting for Everani marriage.
Oh my gosh. Lastly, obviously, the Gaze Electric is a ship that gets passed down. It's an old ass ship. Like we've talked about this already, but that is an old ship. And she's already like meeting people who grew up on ships that were 300 fucking years old. Like at the time she was alive. Like they don't make them like they used to. I don't know what to say.
One thing that I found really interesting, and then we can move on to the other stories, is she has, you know, what becomes the Nile symbol of the eye mm-hmm. painted on the wall behind her.
Yeah.
But she doesn't describe it as an eye, which mm-hmm. I found really interesting. She mm-hmm. describes it as a sun. Mm-hmm. She describes it as a center of gravity. Mm-hmm. And so for her, like, obviously the storm has very significant connotations to the Everani because their planet was destroyed by storms. But like, it is interesting how there's that development from like the all-seeing eye being really just like the center of gravity, the most important, to going back to that storm terminology. Mm-hmm. So I just found that really interesting.
And I think the mural still exists in the Gaze Electric.
I'm almost positive you're right.
In phase 2, yeah. Mm-hmm. Other things. Shall we talk about how Starlight Beacon aftermath was real, real bad.
It's not good.
Claudia Gray's story about Affy after the fall really fucked me up. And I mean that in a positive way. It didn't surprise me the way she described it necessarily. And I could have like pictured that myself. But the way she was describing it, and I talk about 9/11 on this pod all the time. Sorry, everybody. But like, it felt like, you know, as a person who like has seen that like level of crisis or its equivalent in real life. Like, she captured it fucking perfectly. The two bits that stood out to me especially were the wall that Affy sees where all the missing posters are. And I remember, yeah, that was left up for ever, like even like, you know, months and years after what happened. I would walk past that wall of missing people when I was in Lower Manhattan. And the other thing was that, like, there's a itty bitty time jump, and Affy's like seeing all these, like, we have to go after the Nile, like, we will strike back, whatever strength things. And she's just like, what happened to togetherness and community care and all this other stuff? And, you know, we're just out for vengeance because, like, striking back feels good. And we're whatever the fuck is going on in Iran right now. It's just like it which feels like, you know, the same old shit all over again. That felt really fucking real. I have a really acute memory of, like, my family having the news on and Bush Jr. Announcing that we were invading Afghanistan. And I just, yeah. Yeah, Claudia is an incredible writer, and, you know, I know that, and also sometimes I'm reminded with a actual absolute fucking punch in the face. Like, it's, yeah.
Yeah, that part was very painfully America coded, but also human. Like, I feel like this is, like, kind of the whole, if you, like, go back to, like, the original George Lucas view of the Jedi and the Force, it's like the whole thing that they're against is reaching for anger. And anger is a very easy and relatable thing to reach for when you're sad. Mm-hmm. And, like, none of the Jedi in this, Affy, Leox, Geode obviously has very deeply felt emotions, but keeps them in check.
He does.
But, like, it's very intentional not to reach for anger. Reaching for anger is, and not doing so is a choice. And it's a choice that you need to make.
To the dark side.
It is, famously. And it's a choice that you need to make more than once. Because you're always going to be reminded of what happened.
Did anyone ever tell Anakin that?
Nope.
I mean, I'll tell you what. Qui-Gon would have if he hadn't died.
Yikes almighty. All right.
Well, what are you going to do? I'm speaking of people who fuck.
Qui-Gon.
True.
And Shmi.
Hey.
Anakin's real dad right there.
Star Wars.
I will say, as depressing as certain parts of the story were, I thought way more people were dead. So
yeah that's a good,
like,
point.
Wow. I was shocked. I was like, I thought Claudia Gray killed everybody. I didn't think people survived the crash. Like, I thought 90% of the people in that chapter were just gone.
Yeah, that's fair. Honestly, I
and by chapter I meant book.
But I did add a few more to your list of ones who are, huh? Oh, to your list of people who were missing, presumed dead. So we've got. Or you go.
No, I was just gonna say, you know who's not presumed dead? Stellan, because he's all the way
he's
dead.
Confirmed he's dead, baby. Dead.
Jesus Christ.
Today we commemorate all of the fallen on Starlight Beacon and celebrate Stellan dying. Stellan sucks, guys.
I'm still not over when Devin thought it was Stellan Skarsgård. Oscar nominee.
Didn't win his Oscar, he's dead to us.
Are you done with your point?
Oh, I mean, just, like, noting that, like, you know, on the list of missing and presumed dead, Imri, Avon, J6, is that the droid's name?
Mm-hmm.
Burry, the most important on this list, arguably.
Little baby.
Lula, most important if you're Zine.
Mm-hmm. She's very important to me, also, but yeah, go on.
Master Buckets.
You know DJO's crying about that one.
Absolutely. Oh, Farzala, Skeer. I did forget. Skeer as well. All these people who are missing and presumed dead, and, you know, will, when we get into phase 3, you know, for real, we're going to learn about what happened to some of these people. But it definitely, like, there were only a couple main characters who died, and it felt like many more while we were reading The Fallen Star.
Yeah.
And then you realize how many characters there are in the High Republic. But, like, it's...
But there are also characters who are very close to the main characters, and obviously these writers aren't all the way dumb. Like, I feel like we're going to feel a lot of ripple effects in Phase 3, so...
You know what Claudia didn't need to tell us? About all the pets that died. God, dude, fucking damn it, Claudia. Why?
Honestly,
why is there a line about that? I mean, not only is there a line about the pets and the droids dying, it's a line that then they saw their little corpses and then they got dragged out to sea. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
What the fuck?
No, every time I think about the big fire, the Marshall fires, which is, for those who don't know, the big fire that burned down like 1.5 towns in Colorado, suburbs in Colorado a few years ago, I do think about all the fucking animals, and I just want to lie on the floor forever.
Again, cults are bad.
What?
I'm going to leave if we get
the Marshall fire was caused by a cult. You know this.
Yeah. What? It's actually true.
It was literally caused by a cult who was burning open flames on a red flag day.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. One thing I do want to talk about all the people missing, presumed dead, that I had not actually thought about until just now when we were talking about, is in the line in the story we read about, I think it's Ram's story, where like the guy, the little crab face kid, is like doing all his impressions.
Oh, Court, yeah. Uh-huh.
That took me out.
Deeply hilarious. Yes. Absolutely wonderful. We love something lighthearted. Now I'm thinking about him doing like a Skeer impression. Hours to days before this, and I want to walk into the sun.
Oh my god.
Presumably he's dead too, right?
Court, we know, is alive.
Yeah.
Court, we saw getting out of Starlight Beacon when we saw Buckets going back in.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Oh no.
I know, right?
But no, I mean, that's super real, and I think that is, whether intended or not, like, it's a really incredible dichotomy, because that story, like, has to have happened like within a week.
Oh yeah, I mean
and that's also how you deal with tragedy too. Like when something happens, like if you know somebody who dies, you're like, "Hey man, I saw this person yesterday."
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, it's very, not to bring up a little bit fucking again, but like, you know, you always hear these stories about people who like coincidentally were like, "I can't go to work today. I worked at the World Trade Center. I am only alive because I had food poisoning." Like, it's that kind of shit. Like, it's just those small things. No, 100%. Absolutely. No, like, having those stories back to back was fucking devastating. It's almost like these people know what they're fucking doing when they
almost
make things.
Almost like it's on purpose.
Yeah.
It's almost like writing is actually art.
What? News to me.
We famously don't agree with that on this podcast.
I don't know about all that.
Fuck. All right.
Anyway, now that Stellan's dead, who wants to hate Vern?
Dude, her, honestly, like, literally a line in her story is the Jedi Order was lost. Like, they keep like trying to chase after the Nile and it's not working. And I'm like, bitch! You know your dad started this whole thing, right? Like, he was just like, let's go after the Nile and be military and all this shit. And Avar was like, no. And someone was like, fuck you. And he won. And so now he's dead. And Vern is like, cool. I dedicated my whole life to this fucking thing. And I don't fucking recognize it anymore. And I'm like, great.
I have to say, when we first were introduced to Vern, I didn't mind her. And then the more we heard from her, I found her a little bit annoying, not that bad. But man, the Acolyte really just made me, like, I got to Vern and I was like, fuck.
It is wild how much the Acolyte has shaped my view of Vern.
Okay.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Vern, like, listen, I'm so mad that Acolyte got canceled for a whole lot of reasons, but Vern becoming her father's daughter and me not getting more of that is like way up there, dude. Like, I'm so mad about it. Like, also, we had a fucking light whip on camera and they were like, lol no. We had Darth Plagueis on camera and they were like, lol no. Disney, I hope you suck a whole bag of dirty dicks. I fucking hate you.
But Kate, have you considered they also had to have multiple people of color on camera? So, I mean, come on, that cost.
Listen, That fucking cast was impeccable. And also, Manny Jacinto deserves better. Please give him buckets and buckets of cash.
Not buckets of blood, to be
correct. Exactly. Yes.
I mean, listen, if he wants it, then that's not my business. Yeah. That's not my business.
I don't want to know about it. I was going to make a joke, and it was really bad.
Also, if you're listening, always remember that The Acolyte had just as good ratings as every other Star Wars show, and they just didn't want to pay for it. So whenever somebody tells you nobody watched it, that is an objective lie that we have the knowledge to, that we have the facts to say that is actually incorrect.
Listen, let me pass away. I was just talking to Aaron Cohen of Star Wars Bookworms, who is also my boss, about how bad we are about this. So anyway.
But yeah, classic Vern, man, the galaxy's pretty fucked up. What if I simply escape my problems and not do anything about it?
She truly, you know, I remember when they announced the casting for her, I was like, I never thought of Vern as a white woman. But with this, that's right. She just went to Bali.
She lives, laughs, loves the fuck out of that.
I helped the natives.
Okay. Oh my goodness.
Triggered.
I mean, apologies, but also not really. That's our true.
No, I get like it. Yeah, no, she's on a church trip to any race. Right. She and the Mormons painting fences.
Oh, they really did make her white, huh?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, like, I don't know how one pronounces the name of the planet. Mieko. Beautifully described. And also, you can... Shoo, girl. Like, anyway. Yep.
Yeah, Justina Ireland is such a good world builder, I will say. Like, I'm. This is such a tiny note. But I loved the little fish, the Noosa fish, yes. The planet without a moon, and then the Noosa. I was like, yes. Give me more Justina Ireland.
Yeah, see, I was obsessed with the grass, so I totally feel like,
I was very confused about the grass, but I loved it.
Yeah, it's just a hell of a lot of grass, and it's real sturdy, dude. Like, I love that. That was super cool. And also the way that all the buildings were made out of the grass, because it's the sturdiest material they could figure out. And I'm like, yeah, I would trust a house made out of grass on my planet 100%. Like,
I kind of want one of the, and I admit I have not seen the new season of Visions, but I've heard questionable things. But the first season of Visions, I really, really liked, and I need to see the second one. And I would love an episode set on this planet. Yes. I feel like the anime format would just be perfect for it.
Yeah,
that'd be very
so
fun.
Good.
The coin. Is
I also have not seen
grass.
The third season of Visions.
Or third season. See, I don't even know. I don't. What's
Star
Wars?
I've seen none seasons of Visions.
You didn't see the first one? Didn't we cover it on the pod?
I saw maybe a couple episodes if we watched them.
Listen, don't assume the Burb has watched literally anything.
Hey, Burb, how far are you in Rebels?
I do not have Disney Plus.
Did you watch Andor?
I need to watch Andor. I've watched like
I said what I said.
I can't believe you got through 2025 without watching Andor.
I know. Verona looks like crazy. She's about to pass out.
No, just because that was like one of the highlights of the last few years for me.
I know. And I need to watch it, but I like need to be in a place to watch it. And I need to text Kate for a Disney Plus login.
There are book tie-ins that are fun
Burp,
Easter eggs.
Yeah. Burp, I'm just going to tell you right now. In the world we currently live in, there is no place where it's a good time to watch Andor.
You just
kind of need to push through and
have
do it.
To do it. Episode 8 or 9 or whichever one it was. But maybe both. Woof. But
yeah, it's both.
Devin, what were you?
Oh, I was going to ask Bird because I'm curious if it was just a Star Wars thing. Are you caught up on The Pit or is it just Star
Wars? Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. I'm caught up on The Pit.
I really want to watch The Pit. It's worth watching, yeah.
Yeah, I've heard that from many people with many different tastes in media.
Yeah, that's me too. I've like heard from like people with very different opinions that it's amazing.
Mm-hmm. All right. Yes. Well, I'm only gonna watch it while I'm intoxicated, though, because
we can all try it when I'm in Denver.
Ooh,
we can.
I like that. All right. It's a plan. I like that.
What did we watch last time you were here?
The Care Company.
Oh, God, that's right.
Yes, I forgot that's what we watched.
Oh, what a show. I love. Oh, we need to continue. We need to finish our rewatch.
Tim Robinson is a genius.
Tim Robinson's the only thing keeping me alive at this point. Let's be honest. It's not Star Wars. It's just Tim Robinson.
And it's not me either. All right.
Anyway, thanks for listening to our podcast.
Hello, I have one more thing. Fuck you, Gumby.
Fuck you, Chris.
Jesus fucking Christ. Okay, I think all we have to say here going into phase three is that the Nihilists at this point basically won. They've just mm-hmm. established their whole own sector of space. We hear many times that it's called the Inclusion Zone. It is being contained and also guarded by the Stormwall. We don't know.
Great name. What...
Yeah, yes. And we don't know what that means exactly yet, aside from, like, it seems like the technology that Chancey Arrow was working on, where it pulls ships out of hyperspace and in bad fucking places.
And then crushes them in its mind vice.
Kind of, yeah, though.
I mean, Afi seemed to think though. That's what was going to happen.
So yeah, I think that's the setup we have so far going into phase three. There will be more, obviously, because I told Chris to break this book up because he really wanted us to read this whole goddamn book and four comics like a psycho. So read the rest of the book and also four comics for next episode. Anyway, I'm done.
We can't finish this without Rana's point at the end, which mm-hmm. I'm always sorry, co-sign.
This is why
no, you're
I
real.
Don't record half the time. No, you're... the last time I recorded, I was like, "Oh shit, Marta chopped off Yana's hand. Now we're really in a Star War." And then this time, Vernestra chops off another goddamn hand because again, we're in a Star War.
Rana's only going to be on for the hand chopping episodes now.
That's all I'm here for. Don't read into it. All right. Well,
someone does have to sign out before I start playing.
To sign out. Okay, I'll just do it. Thank you if you have managed to make it through this. I don't know how you have, but I don't know how to sign off an episode. I've never done this before. So, like Kate said, we'll see you next week. Actually, it won't be next week.
Oh my god.
I don't know how to sign off.
Star Wars.